Is there anything that you are still scared of?
There were certain moments in my life where things didn't go according to plan. I grew up on a farm, so it was always riding bike, riding horse, jumping off cliffs. And then there was a time where, you know, they tell you that, well, you're just not good enough. You can't play for this team. I know on the inside how good I am or what I'm capable of doing. I got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and it really hit me. I mean, that it brought my life to a standstill at the age of 21. I was driving to her, arm was in a sling, and it happened as quickly as just taking my eyes off the road for like a split second. And the next moment I wake up with a man standing over me, waking me up and just telling me, listen, you hurt your back really bad, just lie still. Little did I know that that event will shape and change my life forever. That's where the whole sports mentality really helped me. No paraplegic has done it in South Africa. It's one of the hardest things that I ever had to do in my life. An Ironman to me is a lot easier than dealing with paralysis.
Do you think the fear of death ignited that within you?
I think there's one thing that I'll always fear.
Having read your book, I know that your childhood has played a big part in you becoming the person that you are today. Tell us a little bit about young Alwyn and how you grew up.
When I think of like growing up years and childhood, I often reflect back on that, and it played a major role in, I think, what I do today, but also the way that I, you know, handle things that happened. But growing up, it was like, I don't know how to explain this, but I always had this sense of, you know, there was something bigger, like there's a bigger picture that we need to work for or to fulfill. And when the accident happened, it's almost like that just got awakened in me. But growing up, I was very adventurous, very outdoors, playing with friends, just doing all these fun kind of things. And, you know, almost like that zest for life. I grew up on a farm, so it was always riding bike, riding horse, jumping off cliffs, all that kind of stuff. And I remember, like, I told my parents that one day when I start working, I don't know exactly what I want to do, but I don't want to, you know, sit in an office the whole day and just be, you know, secluded to that environment. I just want to be outside and do those kind of things. And I think there was always this sense of, as I said, growing up, there's a bigger picture, that there's something greater that I want to do. And when I started encountering challenges in my life, it's almost like that just, it sparked something within me that there's more to life than what I'm perceiving right now. And just being focused on me, but there's a bigger picture of actually adding value to other people's lives. So that's always been like inside of me. I don't know how to describe it even. I think it's something that God places in your heart. And if it wasn't for the challenges that I went through, we'll get into that a bit later, I don't think I would have realized the full potential actually to how the Lord wants to use me in that sense. Sport was also a very big part of my life. And there were so many lessons that I learned throughout that. And I think the most important one was work ethic, is doing things even when it's not comfortable, even when you don't want to do things, that you are playing for a team that's not just about you. And that's something that carried me throughout my whole life, is that work ethic, doing things when it's uncomfortable, doing things when I don't want to do it, because there's a bigger picture, because it's not just for yourself, but you're actually playing for a team. And later in life, I think that's something that really helped me and saved me in this situation. Everything that happened with me, that I had to just stick it out and, you know, get the courage and just really keep on going through that.
And what are some of these pinnacle moments within your younger years that stands out, that, you know, these were moments that shifted things in your life, either cognitively or physically changed you?
When you ask a question like that, it's it's funny to say, but I actually think of the moments that were very difficult for me in my life. There were many great moments. Like I had an amazing childhood, but there were certain moments in my life where things didn't go according to plan, and I learned a lot through those moments. I think the first thing, and this might sound small, but it was the disappointment of not making a certain team. When I was 19 years old, I went to Durban and I played for Sharks under 19. And there was a moment where I didn't get picked for a team. And it had a major effect on me. You know, because here I am sewing everything into this moment, trying to make a career out of rugby. And then there was a time where, you know, they tell you that, well, you're just not good enough. You can't play for this team. And something shifted inside of me of that I know on the inside how good I am or what I'm capable of doing, even despite people not seeing that at the moment, to keep on believing in myself. And that's something that really helped me when I faced real challenges in my life. Another moment that really shifted things for me is at the age of 21, I got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is a disease in your thick intestine, and it really hit me. I mean, that it brought my life to a standstill at the age of 21. So it's funny to say, but the biggest challenges that I faced were the things where I learned the most in my life, and it was actually just preparing me for what was coming. And it's like, I didn't know what was coming, but I know that the Lord understood what was coming. And it's not like He brought those things about, but He was busy teaching me and training me, you know, for those moments. Those were two moments that really stood out to me. And then, of course, my car accident that I had at the age of 24 was a pivotal moment in my life where everything changed. Everything changed in my whole life. Life as I knew it changed completely, you know, where the script just got flipped completely on its head. And you get faced with a moment where you have to make a choice, then what are you going to do now? Are you going to keep on going, or are you going to give up in this moment? So those were like key pivotal moments in my life that everything changed.
And to me, those moments generally of self-awareness and realizing what those moments actually meant only came afterwards. Like, it's obviously not necessarily, especially being young in high school and primary school, when things bad happen, although you are a little bit self-aware and you might think that this could have a big effect or there is hope on the other side, for me personally, those moments were generally only when I looked back at what happened, I was like, okay, maybe this actually did contribute to a better future for me. But in those moments, I know you've had multiple operations, you've had multiple challenges in terms of your career and your journey there. And I think it must have been quite difficult to see the light in those moments, even though you realized that there could be something different coming out of that. But was that also the case for you, that it's generally afterwards where you could almost get a revelation from God that this is why you went through this?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you, in that moment, you can't see any possibility out, you see no fruit at all. And I think we all ask that question, why is this happening to me? You know, and as I was growing up, those were the questions that I kept on asking, like, why do I have to go through this? You know, why am I, you know, facing more trouble in my life than most people see in 10 lifetimes? Because that's how it felt to me. And I didn't see any reason why this was happening. But being in a wheelchair now for 8 years, you know, since this has happened, I can look back and I can, you know, with hindsight, I can really, I can't fully understand why everything has happened, but I can see the fruit of it and I can see the result of it. And I can see how that has shaped my life, and not just physically, but the way that I think about things. And that is priceless. You know, once your mind gets shifted and renewed, it changes everything. It's just sad to say that those things don't just happen by themselves. They don't just happen by having the best moments or good experiences, but through trials, these things get developed. There's also a scripture that talks about, you know, character gets developed through trials. And one can easily read over that and not really understand or get the revelation thereof. But once you've gone through some trials, you'll understand what that means. And you'll see how your character has been developed and shaped through these events for the better.
And how do you deal with these setbacks? Like, obviously, when you're young and you get these challenges, like at the academy, and you're like, you're not going to become the sports player that you've always dreamt of being. Like you said, sports played a big part in your life. So obviously you had major dreams of what you would be physically able to achieve. And then all of these challenges that you kind of experienced were all physical. Like they're all with your body. And how did you deal with those setbacks in terms of your mental game? Or did you have a certain way that it manifested? Were you angry? Were you disappointed? Were you discouraged? Or how did you deal with those emotions that really come to the forefront when you put through your paces?
Yeah, so to me it was a sense of like I wasn't ready to give up. And I think it comes down to identity and what is your expectation for yourself of your own life. And that's something that really saved me when I went through really deep and dark waters, is my identity into what the Lord has called me to be. And when a setback comes, I realize that this isn't lining up to what God has called me to be. So I know it's not the end. And I couldn't accept just being in that position. And that drove me to just keep on going and not giving up in that situation. But knowing that there is something better, there is something greater, and if I'm not seeing it yet, then I can't give up until that time. So it comes down to how do you see yourself? How do you see your own life? And what is your expectation for your own life? And to me, it was like, it's so difficult to explain, but I just couldn't be satisfied with where my life was at that moment. And I knew there was something bigger. I knew there was something greater to strive for continually.
I found that extremely interesting, having read your book and watching the documentary. The continuous thought that I had was like, how do you go through this seeing the positive and the hope? Like you mentioned that you thought that the worst thing that could happen is you becoming paralyzed, and then it actually happened. Like and to me that is like, as our general population gets so quickly discouraged if you just had a bad day and you struggle to see that a week can get better, or your job can get better, or your relationship can get better. And it's never been my core thought to think about its link to your identity of, this couldn't be the best that this relationship that I'm in can be. This isn't the best work for me to live out my gifts and talents and make that your kind of departure point as to, but if that's not the case, then I'm not done. Then I have to step up. Then I have to take courage and actually move into a step of faith and do something different, or just get out of your slump. Because I think, especially going back to the accident, the rehabilitation phase, those 12 weeks, I mean, that had to be quite a significant transition for you to take your mindset from, this is my new reality, and then figuring out how to deal with this. Invite us into your head in those first couple of weeks. Just maybe begin with how the accident happened, and then that journey from that point to rehabilitation.
Yeah, so if I go back to how the accident happened, just to briefly give you an overview of that, I was actually seeing my girlfriend at the time. We were together for a few months, and I was visiting her over the weekend. But the funny thing is, I just had a rugby injury before that. So my arm was in a sling. I tore all the muscles on my shoulder, my pec, and my bicep. So, and yeah, horrendous accident, basically, just that in itself. And I was driving to her, arm was in a sling, and it happened as quickly as just taking my eyes off the road for like a split second, just quickly looking at the radio and then back on the road. And in that time when I was looking at the radio, the front wheel of my car caught the gravel on the side of the road, and that sound just gave me a fright, and I just plucked the steering wheel a little bit too hard. And before I know it, you know, I didn't have control over the car. And it happened so quickly. It was almost like it's all just a bit of a blur because I couldn't imagine how quickly these things happen. Before I knew it, the car was going off the road and it was rolling and I fell out. And the next moment I wake up with a man standing over me, waking me up and just telling me, listen, you hurt your back really bad, just lie still. And I remember the first thought going through my mind is like, how does he even know that I hurt my back? Who is this guy? And I tried to get up and there was just nothing. It's like my legs just don't listen to my head anymore. And then, you know, the whole rehabilitation process began for me. Little did I know that event will shape and change my life forever. Something that happened in such a quick few seconds changes your life forever. And you can't turn back the clock at that stage. And I think that was a huge reality for me, is that many things in life we can fix. If we make a mistake, there's grace. We can fix it. The Lord will help us, you know, if we repent and turn back to Him. But this was something that I couldn't fix, that I couldn't just turn back the clock, and I had to face it head on. And I think for the first few weeks, possibly months, it felt like a bad dream. Felt like this is not happening to me. How could this happen to me? This is not possible that this can happen to me. And I had to start facing the reality. Okay, this happened. Now, what are we going to do with it from here? Am I going to sit in bed, just do nothing? Is this over? Am I going to give up my life at the age of 24? Because those thoughts were going through my mind. It's like, I'm 24 years old. I'm paralyzed. I'm depressed as hell. And am I going to give up right now? Or am I actually going to try and do something with this and just give it a shot? And I think that was something that stuck in my mind, is that how could you give up before you've even tried? Just because this huge task, this mountain is before you, how could you give up and you haven't even tried it before? And I think that's where that whole sports psychology comes in, is to just give it a go at least, you know, that competitiveness almost. And that really meant a lot to me in rehabilitation, because you do exercises, they try and get your body strong again. And that's where that competitiveness almost kicked in again, because they give you certain milestones to achieve. And before you can go home, you need to be able to do certain things. And I remember I came to about 10 weeks in rehabilitation. I was like, look, I'm fed up with this place. I really want to go home now. What do I need to do to get home? And they said, well, if you can get up from the floor on your own without any assistance, you know, that checks one box. If you can get dressed, that checks another box. If you can look after yourself. So there were these certain milestones that I had to achieve. And I almost saw it as, I wouldn't say a game, but I saw it as a challenge. And I just wanted to get out there. So I was fighting for my independence again. And that's where the whole sports mentality really helped me. It really got me out of a very dark place at that moment. But to put it in simple terms, those 12 weeks were probably the hardest time of my entire life. How I've learned so much about myself in that time. I really learned what I'm actually made of in that time, mentally and physically. And it's incredible how 12 weeks is not long. You know, time flies. When you close your eyes, it's over. But when you're in a situation like that, it feels like 12 years. It feels like this is the longest period in your entire life. But the character development that happened in that time was priceless. And not just that, there was a spiritual development in that time that I wouldn't trade for anything. I've always been a Christian. I've always, you know, gone to church, read my Bible, you know, do the good Christian guy things. But in that time, there was a deepening in my spirit, something that happened, because I sought the Lord like never before. You know, reading my Bible, went to church, listening to sermons, just trying to find answers for what is happening. And when you look for answers in that kind of way, let me just say this, I never found the answer. but I found the heart of the Father. And that is something that you cannot trade for anything in this life. I still look back at that moment and realize that something shifted inside of me, in my heart, in my spirit. And that's where I got hope that, you know, the Lord has a plan with me, even though I couldn't see it at that time.
Do you think the fear of death ignited that within you? Was it that this could have been the end, but I got a second chance, and therefore I should be grateful, even though the picture does not look the way that I intended or I wanted it to look like? But I'm alive, I have breath, so I should be grateful. Because obviously I think within those 12 weeks, you're not necessarily grateful. You're thankful for food and that you are alive, but you're not necessarily grateful in such a way that you are like invigorated with life. So do you think that it had to do with that moment that you almost lost your life? And while I'm asking that, I also want to go back to that moment while lying next to the car. You were conscious, right?
Yeah, I was.
And that moment, what were the thoughts that goes through your head? Like did you still fear your life, that you might go to the hospital and actually something could happen? Or what are the actual thoughts that go through your mind when you've just survived something as brutal as that?
So I think there wasn't this realization that, listen, I almost died. I'm so lucky to be alive in rehabilitation. Because then I was just focused on, getting back on my feet, rehabilitating. It's only afterwards that I really realized, wow, I actually got a second chance. The question that I had in my heart was, Lord, why did you keep me alive? What grace, what mercy is this that you would keep me alive, but now I'm in a wheelchair, now I'm paralyzed. Why didn't you just take my life? Okay, those were the thoughts that went through my mind. Years later, I realized that it was God's mercy, it was His grace to actually keep me alive in that moment, to get a second chance to get my life right with Him. Because when I had the accident, I was lying in the ambulance, and I will never forget this. I was lying in the ambulance in the most pain that I've ever felt in my entire life. My whole body was shaking, I was ice cold, and I kept on, screaming at the paramedic, just give me something for the pain. Just give me something, anything. And they said, listen, we can't give you anything. We still need to diagnose you at the hospital. A doctor needs to see you. What's going on? We can't give you anything. And the thoughts went through my mind. I told them, listen, I'm dying. Like, you got to do something because I'm not going to make it. And those weren't just fear. It wasn't just fear talking. Afterwards, they told me that I was so close to dying that it's a miracle that I actually just made it. And I can't describe to you that fear of you're going to die now and you don't know where you're going. Now remember, I'm a Christian. I know the Lord. Why would I fear death in that way? And that revealed something in my heart. It revealed that, do I really know Jesus? Do I really have the conviction of my salvation that I thought that I had? And clearly I didn't, because then I wouldn't fear death. Then you would actually be, well, I'm going home now. I've had a good ride, I'm going home now. And that was a huge reality check for me, is that, do I have the security of my salvation? And those were the things that I thought about when I was in rehabilitation. That why was I so fearful of dying? And it's something that I cannot describe to people, the fear of death, the fear of the unknown. I think you can ask anyone in this world and they'll tell you, if you're not sure where you are going, most people don't even want to think about it because they don't know what to think about it, because it is something so, it is scary. You know, what happens after this? So that was a big moment for me. And the message that I always preach and the something that I want to make people aware of is that we don't know when is our time. We don't know what's going to happen. You can drive home from work and you can be in an accident and this could be your last day here. So make sure that you know where you are going right now, today. Don't wait till tomorrow. Don't wait till you're on your deathbed, because most people don't even reach that point. I mean, death is so uncertain. And you know, it sounds funny when I say these kind of things, but I believe that is a huge part of my testimony, is to get your life right with the Lord right now, while you still have time to do this, and don't wait till tomorrow for that.
After rehabilitation, you went home, back to the farm. How did you start rebuilding your life from that moment forward? Obviously, life looked a lot different. Your dad was there. How did rebuilding your life look like for that first few weeks and months?
When I got back to the house, I think I got back on like a Thursday or a Friday, and the Monday I went back to work. So I didn't go back to full-time working. I went back to like a half-day kind of work, maybe just going in the mornings, because to me it felt like I just want to get back to normal again, or as normal as possible, because that really helped me, you know, just deal with these kind of things. Because sitting at home alone with your thoughts, that's dangerous. When you're alone at home, got nothing to do. And for the first few months, my mind was so consumed with what happened that it became dangerous. Honestly, it's like you cannot function outside of that dark hole that you're in. But when I went back to work, just starting getting out, it really helped me just to process a little bit better what's happening. Gave me more perspective into what I'm going through and everything that's happening. But it took me a good few months to really get back into life, into normal living again. But if there's one thing that I can say, the quicker that you return to normality, the quicker you will start to adapt to these kind of things. And it's unfortunate, but most people that go through similar events where they experience great loss or car accidents or paralyzed, they don't return to their workplace. They don't return to normal life. And I completely understand it as well, you know, to get over this kind of thing. But to get over it, you need to get back to normal life. It's not the other way around. It's not that you first have to get over it and then return to normal life. I found it that if I get back to doing these kind of things, then I will get over it. And that really helped me. Another thing that was very important for me is my independence in being able to drive around on my own, doing things on my own, and not constantly requiring help to do these things. So that really helped me.
And how did it change the relationship with the people closest to you?
I think it had a big impact on the people around me. And I could see that. And, you know, that was actually the most difficult thing for me, because even though I've received healing in my heart and I'm starting to move on and I'm coping with this, looking at the people around me and seeing how it has impacted them is something, it's tough to see. It's honestly very tough to see. And I don't want to jump to, you know, the story now, but that was one of the big reasons why I got into what I'm doing right now, is to show people that, listen, I'm still the same person. I'm actually okay. I'm coping with this. But it had a major impact on them. I think even till today, it had a major impact on the people close to me.
Do they treat you differently?
Not really differently, but I can see that they sympathize with what happened and they want to help, but unfortunately it's almost like it's my cross to carry. You know, no one can carry it for me. I'm the one in the wheelchair. I need to deal with this. So seeing someone that you love in a situation like this, you want to help them, you want to be there for them, but there's only so much that you can do.
There was a moment where, in your book, we read about you wanting to take your own life, where things got so bad, or so dark, rather. How did you get to that point, and what happened after that?
It's what I find interesting is that it was such a roller coaster at that time. The one moment you're up, the one moment you're down. But the downs were really low. I'll be very honest with you, they were very, very low. And I came to a point where even though I got a little bit back on track, back to living, there was still this thing in my mind of like, why are you keep on fighting? Why don't you just give up? And that's just blatantly, you know, the enemy whispering in your ear. And I've spoken to many people in similar situations. So many people come to that point where they say, well, you know, I just don't have any fight left in me. I don't see a way out. And I think that was the biggest factor that actually got me to that point, is not having a vision of how your life is going to look going forward. And the Bible also tells us that, you know, without vision, my people will perish. And that is so true. If you don't have a vision of where God is taking you or what is his expectation for your life, it's very difficult to actually go for something. It's very difficult to actually move forward into something. So I came to a point where I was just like, I don't think I can do this. I don't know if I've got any fight left in me, because it was constantly fighting for months on end, battling this thing. And the one thing that really got me through this was just that reminder of that God still has a plan with us all, despite what happens. And even though I can't see the way out, I know that he has a plan. And that's where your faith really gets tested. That's where your faith really gets tested. So when I think of like hope is just, you know, faith in a future expectation. But when you really put faith into action, it's actually believing those things, believing in the hope that God has given you, and actually acting that out. Because you can have a hope but not apply your faith to it. And I really had to apply my faith to what God is saying, even in his word, even despite that I can't see everything. So that was a very tough time to me to deal with. But the moment that I made that decision to not give up right then and there, the decision became easier every single day. But it's not like it was a one-time decision and then the thought just completely left me. It took a while to really, you know, get to grips with those kind of things.
What was the most difficult challenge that you had to overcome in terms of the mental game and the physical game? Obviously, you had this war in your mind in terms of regaining perspective of what life looks like to you now. And then also there was the physical battle in terms of, I would never be able to jump back onto a sports field and live out my dream. But to get to that dark place where you almost wanted to take your life, like, was that primarily based on the emotional burden or the physical burden?
I think the physical side is undeniable. That was huge, you know, trying to adapt to doing things. And I'll be honest with you, everything was a bit of a struggle. Getting dressed in the morning took me 20, 30 minutes, you know, just going through my paces. That was something that's huge to adapt to, the physical side of things. Not being able to do certain things anymore, being limited in a physical capacity. And I think it's because I was someone that was so... The physical side of life was like my strong point, you know, being a rugby player, and that's like everyone knew you as that. And now all of a sudden, it's like now you need help with everything. So the physical side was huge. But I think the mental side will always be the greater part of getting your mind over this, what happened, and letting it go. That to me was very difficult, of letting go of who I was and trying to embrace everything that had happened and where are we going next. So the mental side of it was huge. The physical side, very difficult, but it played a bigger mental role on me than anything else, really.
How did you go after this journey of regaining perspective, like you said now, like there was this the mental struggle and the physical struggle, but rebuilding, nobody or very few people have the ability to rebuild their life at a certain point. Where they have a second chance, their life might look a little bit different, but they actually have the wonderful privilege, the God-given mercy, to restart. How did you go about in terms of rediscovering your purpose, even though it looks different for the a different Olvain. But how did you go about rediscovering your purpose? Because I often find that if we have to rediscover our purpose, a big part of that comes from the stuff that we went through as a child. And then when you had so many, like you said, you experienced so many things that people won't experience a lifetime before 24. Obviously, there were a lot of things that you could work with to build a purpose or meaning into your life. And especially coming back to one of your initial comments, that you always knew you were meant for more. So having known that, having gone through everything that you did, what did the journey look like to build a new life for Olvain in search of Christ, in search of yourself, and in search of a purpose?
It was a gradual process, definitely. It wasn't the, you know, letting go, moving on all in one day. It was this gradual process of letting go of the old life that I had, and I'll never have it again. You know, that first life, I would almost say. And then there was a big period of uncertainty as well, that I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how it's going to turn out. But just trusting still in the process that God still has a plan, and just embracing kind of that part as well, and just trying to get my life back. And I think I stumbled upon what I'm doing now, really. It wasn't a conscious decision necessarily. I think at the beginning I had some kind of idea what the Lord is calling me into, but it doesn't make it any easier at that moment. So rebuilding a life, I think it just happened. It wasn't orchestrated. It wasn't planned, really. It was a journey of trusting in the Lord, walking in relationship with Him, and Him revealing to me the things that are actually transpiring right now. I always put it this way. I never pursued this, what everyone is seeing right now. I pursued to get my life back. That's what I wanted. I wanted myself back. I just wanted to get back to life. And I stumbled upon this, what the Lord is doing, which is incredible. But it was a journey of wanting my own life back, but also just seeking Him in the quiet place and spending time with Him. And something that I realized, I think we all look at calling and purpose and all these kind of things. It's such a popular thing where people ask, what is my calling? What is my purpose? But if I look at primary calling, primary purpose, it is just knowing God and having a relationship with Him. Secondary to that is how He will use you in what He has gifted you with. And I think we switch it around. And the moment where events like this happen, we think, well, now I've lost my purpose, I've lost my calling, and I might as well give up in life. But in actual fact, that's just a secondary way. That's how God will use you. Because if you look at John 17, verse 3, it tells us that knowing God the Father and Jesus Christ is eternal life. Now, if that is eternal life, how much important is it not in this life? You get what I'm saying? So the moment that I started to understand this, that I'm still the same person, God still can use me, but being in a relationship with Him is actually the number one thing, and it must always be. Instead of trying to be so busy and doing things for God that you are missing out on the relationship with Him.
I 100% agree. We often think that we're called to be an accountant or called to be that. We're called first to be a child of God, and then you're called to, or then you, like you said, you use your gifts and talents in a certain way to proclaim His glory. But that almost becomes secondary, where it needs to be first, and then you discover your gifts and talents. I'm curious, in terms of, do you feel now, on the other side of where you are now, that you are living the gifts and talents and the toolbox that God gave you? Do you think you are currently living into that space where you're doing what He has called you to do?
I think I'm scraping the surface, at least. It's very difficult to say, like, you are 100% walking in that. But I do believe that I'm punching in the right direction, at least. And the reason that I say that is because I feel peace, I feel satisfaction, and I can see the fruit of the things that I'm doing and how he's using it in other people's lives. Because, you know, Jesus also said that we shall know them by their fruit, and a tree must bear good fruit. Now, the tree's fruit is not for the tree, it's for the other people feeding from that tree. And I think if we see our lives in that perspective, that it's not just about us, it's about how are the people around us benefiting from the fruit that our lives are carrying. And that to me is always a good indicator of where am I standing with this direction that the Lord is using me in. But of course, you must be happy. You must be, have a sense of fulfillment also in what you are doing. But it's those two factors that really outline to me that am I punching in the right direction, that this is what God is calling me into. My life is bearing fruit. It's blessing people around me. It's bringing other people around me closer to Him. And, I mean, what better privilege is there to be doing what you love, feeling fulfillment, and then also bringing other people alongside and with you into a closer relationship with Him?
I think that's so critically important for today's day and age, where people are suffering anxiety and burnout and depression. And many times, just because they get to a point where they don't recognize themselves, they don't find any meaning or purpose in their work, they don't bear fruit in their relationships are actually being tarnished by the way that they've changed. And it's such a critical, I think, conversation for our time, to spend a lot more focus on what do I have to do to bear fruit? Like, where can God use me to His best, or to our best abilities, in terms of strengthening relationships, doing the good work, whether you're an accountant or a lawyer or whatever you might do, but doing it with a sense that I was meant to do this because this is where I flourish. This is where I produce the most fruit. This is where I make the biggest impact in other people's lives, in my own lives. Because I think that's also a conversation that people don't necessarily have, is there's one way of how it's affecting your life, how you go home and treat your spouse and treat your parents and treat your friends. And then also how you go to work. Like, are you going to work with a joyous heart and excited about what you can do and bring to the table, rather than just it's another day that I have to just survive through. So I think it's a very relevant conversation for our time. I want to chat about the documentary and the reason why you decided to do that. Also, the Ironman journey where you went on regaining physical momentum in sports, and then how you got to the point in terms of deciding, I want to do a documentary about telling the story.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to, I'll start off with the Ironman journey. I remember the reason that I got into doing Ironman in a wheelchair. Something that really intrigued me is because no paraplegic has done it in South Africa. And I think the moment that I read about it or received that knowledge, it's like something clicked inside of me, because for a long time I've asked the question, why me? Why do these things have to happen to me? Instead, I started seeing it a little bit different, where the question turned into, why not me? Because you need to start looking at it like, maybe you are the perfect person to who this should happen. Because the gifts and talents that God has given you perfectly fit the situation. And I know this is a very difficult thing to think about, because you literally have to flip your whole mind around into, well, what I'm going through is actually perfectly tailor-made for me. And I started seeing it that way. Because I love sport, because I'm adventurous, because I have this different spirit maybe inside of me of not wanting to give up how God has created me, it makes me the perfect candidate for doing these kind of extreme events, these outrageous things in a wheelchair. And I thought of the most difficult thing to do, the sporting challenge to do. Because, as you mentioned earlier, being in a wheelchair for me was the biggest challenge that there is. This was my Goliath. And when I got my life back and my life back in order, it felt like, well, everything after that is actually going to be considerably easy. And I know it sounds silly because an Ironman is anything but easy. But if you see this in light of my situation, Ironman to me is a lot easier than dealing with paralysis. And that's the way I started seeing these things. That swimming from Robben Island to Blåberg is actually something very small compared to becoming paralyzed at the age of 24 and having to deal mentally with these kind of things. So I don't know, I might be a little bit crazy, but that's the shift that took place in my heart. And it has blessed me so much in my life just to change the way that I think about these things. And that's how the Ironman journey actually started for me, is getting into these kind of things. And knowing that how incredible God has made the human body to adapt, that you can do these things with your upper body, only with your shoulders and arms, what people do with their whole body, was to me incredible, you know, to embrace that. I remember at the beginning when I started doing these things, I had this question, wow, you know, is it really possible? Is it possible to do these kind of things? And that intrigued me. It excited me to think, well, if someone can do it, then I'm going to be that person. And I started working, you know, towards this goal. And once again, that's where the competitiveness comes in. And I really enjoyed the journey. It's one of the hardest things that I ever had to do in my life, mentally, physically. But it was so rewarding to think that despite these challenges, despite being in a wheelchair, if I really apply my mind to it, if I really apply my life to this, that you can actually do anything that is possible. And it's not in my strength. I always make this very clear. It's God working through me that gave me the strength, gave me the ability, that gave me the talents to do these kind of things. And I remember the swim, the Robben Island swim. That wasn't something that I wanted to do. Let me be very clear about that. I love swimming. I love the ocean. But I don't really have this desire to jump in freezing cold water and swim 8 kilometers.
Not?
No. I don't wake up in the morning and say, oh, this looks like a good idea.
Fun excursion.
Yeah. A fun day out. This was like something that the Lord put on my heart to do, and I didn't understand why. I mean, it's the last thing that I want to do, to be honest. It's something He put on my heart, and I just committed to it. And that's where obedience comes in, blind obedience, of acting out things that when the Lord asks you to do something, tells you to do something, and you say, you know what, I'm going to go for this. I think something important to notice or just take notice of, I don't think I was the first person who God asked to do these things. I really don't. I don't think I was His first choice. But I was obedient to do these things. And after the Robben Island swim, it's only then that I can understand why He really put it on my heart to do. That's when the book deal came. That's when the documentary deal came. That's when the ministry took off. And that's when the Lord, you know, created a platform out of scratch, basically. And that was because of that event. I didn't foresee this. I didn't plan this. But God knew. And He used it. So there will always be fruit from obedience. There will always be fruit.
I'm thinking now in terms of all these things that happened that is basically also shaping the rest of your life. But it must have been quite a transition from going from just dealing with the paralysis and getting into a new groove and then all of these things happening, like the book deal, like the documentary, like all of that. How do you deal with transitions like that? I know we had a conversation previously that we feel that God is really pressing in and doing things in people's hearts for them to step out in faith, like you said, being obedient. And my thinking goes to, like, How do we encourage that? What would your word be for people out there to encourage them to be obedient and to listen to God's voice? Like, how did you go through that transition period of discerning His voice, what the next step should be, and then acting upon it?
I think to answer, like, how did I know He was calling me into the transition? To me, always a very good indicator of transition is when the brook dries up, basically. So if you look at the Bible, there's a story of Elijah. He went and hid by the brook of Hebron. And when he got there, he stayed there for a certain amount of time. And at one point, the brook dried up and the ravens stopped coming, bringing him provision. And that was when the Lord told him to move on from there. So to me, a very good indicator has always been is when my brook dries up and what I'm currently doing, when the provision is starting to dry up, I always knew that God is calling me into the next step, how He's moving me. And that's just how He's worked with me, you know, for a very long time, is when I know that transition is upon me, the first thing is the provision dries up. And the second thing is my passion shifts. And what was once exciting for me and exhilarating to me, it just becomes almost a bit dull to me. It's like my passion, my fire starts going down. And that's when I knew that God is calling me into something else at that time. Now, what I'm referring to right now is the Lord has used me the past 6-7 years for extreme sporting events. And I still love to do those things. But the past 2 years, the Lord has had me really focused on ministry more. And in the past, where I love talking about sports and these extreme challenges because it's who I am and what I do, He shifted my passion to more to a ministry context in impacting people's lives and, you know, enriching their lives and not just focusing on my career and doing what I love to do. And that was, to me, a big indicator is how passion shifts. And dealing with transition is never easy. It's uncomfortable. But often the Lord has to put us in uncomfortable situations to get us to move. Because when everything is just smooth sailing, we don't want to move. We're humans. We love comfort. Okay? Everyone, even everyone listening to these videos, we love comfort. Okay? Comfort zone. That's why it's called that. And when the Lord makes us uncomfortable, when He starts shaking our boxes, to me it's a good indicator that I need to find His peace again. Where's His peace? Where's His peace guiding me to going and residing again? So I would say those three indicators is provision, passion, and then peace. Those to me are the indicators of transition. And then just staying close to the Lord, listening to His voice, listening to the small promptings in what He wants to do with our lives. And I hate to break it to you, but I think our whole life we will be constantly transitioning. Some things bigger than others, but there will always be movement when you walk with the Lord. There will always be movement in your life in certain directions.
As we end our conversation, I'm wondering, is there anything that you are still scared of? With everything that you've experienced, lying next to a car that's completely battered, lying in an ambulance thinking that you're going to die in immeasurable pain, and then doing the adventurous stuff of like swimming in the ocean for 8 kilometers. Mm. Is there something that you are still afraid of or scared of?
I think there's one thing that I'll always fear, and that is the holy fear of God. What do I mean with this is, as you said, like I've experienced many things in the natural, you know, near-death experiences, trials, tribulation, persecution, adventures, you know, swimming, Robben Island, doing an Ironman, overcoming a wheelchair, all these things. So the physical aspect of fear in life, I've even had, you know, financial difficulties and all these things. So I think the natural fear is almost non-existent, also because I can trust in the Lord for all those things. And that is something that I learned throughout this journey, which is priceless, that no matter what comes in life, that if we trust in the Lord, that we will be okay. He will not fail us. And when I talk about the holy fear of God is being away from his presence or being disobedient to what he is calling me to do. And when I know God is saying something to me or calling me into, I fear not doing that. I fear being disobedient and what will happen after that. So that is the one thing that I live by. And I pray it constantly that I may live a life with the fear of the Lord upon me.
Wow. Alwyn, thank you for giving us a glimpse into your life and everything that you've experienced. I think there's no better note than to end the podcast on the fear and the awe of God, and that we all should get to a point where we have rid ourselves enough and have sacrificed enough of life to get to that point where that's the only thing that matters. Thank you for the inspiration that you are. We can see that you are touching lives wherever you go. And you're sowing seeds of hope for people that have maybe gone through stuff that's similar to that, but even people that haven't gone through something as dreadful as what you've gone through, but have learned something about the joys of finding hope and finding life within our challenges. And I'm grateful that I get to watch your journey close to you, and I'm thankful for the time that you've spent with us. So we've got a closing tradition where we're going to ask you a couple of quick fire questions. Literally answer with the thing that pops up in your mind first. And then we have one final question. What book are you currently reading? Except the Bible.
Yeah.
That doesn't count now.
I'm reading actually a book that John G. Lake wrote, A Man Without Compromise. Not a very thick book, not very popular, but great read.
Cool. What is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Don't listen to the opinions of others.
Wow. Name one item on your bucket list.
Skydiving.
Ooh. What is your go-to activity when you need to relax and unwind?
Watch Drive to Survive on Netflix with a packet of Oreos.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. One tip for connecting with people or making friends?
Listen more and don't speak too much.
Sure. Then the last question. Complete the sentence. I feel I'm flourishing in life when...
I'm fulfilling what God has called me to do.
Thank you, Alwyn.
To learn more about Alwyn's story, read his autobiography, Ongeskonde, available in select Koom Books nationwide. You can also catch his documentary, Against All Odds, now streaming on Showmax. Thanks for listening to the Framework to Flourish podcast, hosted by Marco Haasbroek and produced in collaboration with Imagine This. For today's episode, Stefanie de Tooy was our coordinator, John Rehoog our technical producer, and Karina Kloppers our content producer. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn at Flourish Workshops to stay up to date with our latest episodes, workshops, and retreats. Until next time, keep going and growing.